This is the last episode of the year, huh?
Wow, we are. It doesn't even feel like that long ago. We'd done 100 episodes, and now we're well over 200.
Yeah, we are. We are. So this is the last one of the year. Look at the calendar. That's correct. Yeah. Okay, cool. And unless there's like any crazy thing that happens between, you know, now and the actual end of the year. But naturally, we're just going to take a look back at what happened in Apple World this past year and go through it and see how it feels now.
Yeah, we're not going to go like story by story or anything like that, because I think that's pretty dry. But I've kind of like grouped together some various kind of themes that was playing on people's minds as we ended the last year, and then what developed over this year. We can talk about that, and then a bit about where that might be going in 2019.
All right.
So if you think back to our end of year episode last time, the sentiment around Apple, it always somehow turns bad by the end of the year. Like, some catastrophe happens. At the moment, we're going through this, like, iPad Bengate stuff. Last year, we had the battery stuff, which we'll get to. But the big, I'd say, like, the big meme of, like, the 2017 Apple was the whole announcing stuff early and then not releasing it when it was announced, when they said they were going to do it, and then it gets pushed back, and maybe it's pushed back again. And we obviously saw this on both the hardware side and the software side multiple times. And it kind of happened a bit in 2016, but they really kind of secured it last year with stuff like the HomePod debacle. You had AirPlay 2 and Messages in iCloud, which were originally announced as iOS 11 features, but then didn't ship until just before WWDC in 2018. That was really late May in iOS 11.4. That was almost a year delay on those particular features. You had stuff like Apple Pay Cash, which was again supposed to be a 11.0, and then it became, you know, 11.1, 11.2. And the hardware highlight was obviously the HomePod, which again was WWDC announced coming later in the year, and then it got pushed back, and then it was moved to February. And even when it came out in February, you didn't have the AirPlay 2 stuff along with it, so it was impaired. And then when it came out, it even seemed like, you know, some of the features that it should have, it didn't have, and they were even pushed back even further. So even though they weren't official delays, like the calendar stuff is a good example, it just took a while for this stuff to come through. And it, as we were entering the early months of 2018, everything was, the joke was, oh, they're announcing it now and it's coming out in November.
Right.
And I think that in general, Apple has done, like, everybody has short memories. People forget stuff on a dime and move on to the next, you know, the next go-to joke. But I think this year they've cracked that problem, that theme, pretty well. Like, there is, we saw the zero sign-on feature for tvOS actually go live.
Right.
The app that Apple announced alongside with it, the Charter app, has been pushed into next year. But the actual zero sign-on feature of tvOS is live now, so you can just be on public Wi-Fi, or be on the same Wi-Fi network as the provider, and it can show up in TV provider options and power the other apps. And with that in place, there is nothing, because I don't really count the Charter app, because that's more like a third-party thing.
Right, it's not app really availability, yeah.
Yeah, it's not really an Apple concern. The Blackmagic eGPU Pro is technically on sale now, even though it's not shipping till early January. Again, that's half and half an Apple thing and a third-party hardware accessory thing. But there is nothing of substance that we are waiting for now into next year. Like, everything they announced for iOS 12, macOS, watchOS is all available. Like, it's not like our year in review last year where we were just sitting there going, where are half these software features? And where is the HomePod stuff?
Like, yeah, and you could have framed last year as like all the things in software alone as from WWDC as like, this is what's on the roadmap for the next 12 months. And that would have been okay. But the way it was presented is like, this is what's going to be in iOS 11.0, you know, like maybe 0.1, but like not throughout the year. And so much stuff ended up being like throughout the year, like almost a year later. And this year, like with iOS 12, they obviously scaled back like how much they were going to put in it, but they also didn't say they could have like been super safe and like framed everything in iOS 12 at the keynote as like part of iOS 12 throughout the next year, and they didn't do that. Like they you know, there was group FaceTime that got delayed, but like aside from that, everything in iOS 12 was there on day one, really. And they didn't make so in that way, like they didn't like take that iOS 11 lesson and like apply it to 12. They just didn't do as much in 12. And then on the hardware side, like they just haven't promised more than they can do, aside from like the big obvious thing, which is AirPower, and that's still it's a 2017 holdover.
Yeah, like the iPhone XR was later in the year compared to the iPhone XS, but they announced it. They got the date right, if you see what I mean. Like there was no waiting around there.
Yeah.
The group FaceTime thing is like the only thing that comes to my mind that they really actually missed the 0.0 boat on, and it came not in 12.4, it came in 12.1. Like it got out well in advance of, because everything feels okay until you hit the year cutoff, and then it's like, you know, now we're on the different side of the era, so it feels like miles apart. And the message in iCloud and AirPlay 2 are easily some of the worst examples of that on software side, because it was, you know, literally before a month before the next WWDC. Group FaceTime was out before the next Apple event in October, and they even, you know, promoted it there.
Yeah, and regarding AirPlay 2, like that's something that it was kind of vague about what is AirPlay 2 going to be. You know, like it stereo HomePod pairing and multi-room audio was more tangible, but like AirPlay 2 in general, like all the nice benefits of what it actually brings were kind of vague, unless you like studied it. But once AirPlay 2 was in your hands and you could use it, like I think the way that people responded to it, because it's so solid and like it actually works as advertised, and you can do things like, you know, just really control where audio goes and like different volume levels and different combinations without manually setting up groups ahead of time, like it's really good. I think that helped too, because if AirPlay 2 launched and like was terrible, you know, Messages in iCloud like launched and was just awful, like then it would still become part of the story. But when they launched and they're fine, then we just kind of like move on.
Yeah, Messages in iCloud definitely got off badly. It's not enabled by default when you set up an Apple account. You still have to go into the iCloud storage screen and flick the little green toggle to on to actually enable it. Because by default, they only store your message into your iCloud backups, and that's it. So you don't get the proper sync and stuff. And when it debuted in May, it was kind of shaky. Some even today, like if you actually drill down into the settings screen, it will tell me that my conversations are taking up 0 kilobytes in the summary. And then you click through, and then it shows message threads individually, including like me and your conversation, and they're measured in the gigabytes. But the summary number still says 0 kilobytes for me, and it never changes. It's strange. But it actually seems to work now. Apart, like ignoring the weird stats, it does actually sync reasonably well on time by whatever release this is. And I think part of the reason it was seen badly for a while in May is that everyone then jumped on the iOS 12 betas and messed it up again. Especially if you had some devices that were on the betas and some devices that weren't, Message and iCloud could get like out of sync and stuff just wouldn't appear in the right places. I haven't had any of those problems in recent memory that I can call. They definitely happened in June, right? But
yeah.
Since September, I can't think of anything where I've been like Message and iCloud is just like out of sync. There was this one problem I had when I was using the iOS 12 betas on my iPad and my phone, but my Mac was still, it wasn't on Mojave beta. So I'd be in Messages and like either the messages that I made on my phone wouldn't show on the Mac, or like the whole screen would blank out and I'd see one message at the top, and then you'd like scroll down and all the messages would pop back in all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And I haven't had that happen recently. So the message in iCloud first seems relatively stable now. Is that your experience?
I have still seen the thing like where you have one message and it's like the rest of it's blank, and then like
You
click around and then it goes like, then it's like correct again. But in my experience with messages on the Mac, I can't tell you if that's a messages in iCloud problem or if it's a messages on the Mac problem, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah, I know what you mean. Message in the Mac is not in great shape.
Yeah. No, one thing I do wonder is if the off by default state of messages in iCloud is, you know, like it's when it's new, you know, like to go check it out. But like it, beyond that, it's is it just not going to be used? And I can't help but think like maybe the age old question of, you know, the free iCloud storage tier, like if that changes or something, like if that would be a factor there, because to turn it on by default or make it too easy to flip on, if you don't have enough iCloud storage, that then it can take a lot of space, but just because of like attachments, you know, sending pictures and videos back and forth over messages is going to use a lot of your iCloud space if you use the.
But if you don't have it turned on, then the same storage is used because it's just stored in the iCloud backups instead.
Yeah, unless you've got it like turned off for iCloud backup, like because can't you flip off, you know, what gets?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can. Turn off any like all the different stuff from the backup, like yeah. it doesn't really I think the thing is when you turn it on you then disable all the features which are like delete messages automatically after a year or after 30 days, like that stuff just turns off. Even I think even when you turn it on it even changes the keep messages setting from 30 days, which might be the default now to forever. Because you're just going to store it into iCloud, and then you fill up all your storage by, you know, keeping more and more stuff around. I think eventually it will become enabled by default, even if the storage, like iCloud storage, is still terrible. Like we complained about the 5 GB stuff all last year, we complained about it this year. No change there, unfortunately. It will become default eventually. I still think they're worried that there might be some random bugs somewhere in the system, because messages are quite important to people and they don't want to screw it up. So and the actual functionality it provides is relatively subtle, if you know what I mean. Like if you actually think about it, there are some good advantages, but if you're just kind of day-to-day using your devices, the normal, you know, the non-messages in iCloud syncing the messages works well enough that it's not like a super priority for Apple to switch everybody over.
Yeah.
For instance, deleting messages doesn't work on the watch still, and that's problematic.
They've made some change there since it first came out, like where if you delete it, that improves on the watch. Have you tried this lately?
I know you. I think if you delete it from the phone, it disappears on the watch. But if you delete it from the watch, it doesn't disappear on the phone. Is that right?
That sounds right to me. Yeah. Without trying it. Yeah. Which when it first came out, it was just not connected at all. Like the two didn't talk to each other, and that was weird.
And that brings me back to AirPlay 2, which is like it was really really good, and stuff like being able to say, "Play X music in zone," like play X music in the living room, was stuff that we weren't even sure if it was going to do, right? Like, to Siri, like, that kind of control is fantastic.
Yeah.
But then you come to the Mac, and the AirPlay 2 story is non-existent, really. Like, it's iTunes.
Like, yeah,
but
it's like, use iTunes, and that wasn't even at first, and it's not, yeah, it's not good. Yeah.
Like, it needs to be in the system sound panel, because right now, I have two speaker options in that system sound panel, both named Cabin, because I've got a HomePod pair of two HomePods paired together called Cabin, and they're just individual speakers. And when you actually click on one, it's not using AirPlay 2, it's using AirPlay 1. That needs to change next year, next version of macOS, fingers crossed, maybe before then, who knows? But like that's like the black mark, and the Apple Watch isn't great at AirPlay 2 stuff either. Like,
sure.
I want to be able to ask the watch to play on various speakers, and even if it has to proxy it through the phone, it can't do that today either. So that's definitely a direction of AirPlay 2 to improve. But overall, like AirPlay 2 is rock solid, and you can say various Siri queries, and it just kind of works.
Yeah, and another part of the AirPlay 2 story is that it's not just like, you know, Apple TV and HomePod. It, you know, and it also came to Airport Express after Airport Express died this year, which was kind of wild. Like, that was one of the biggest surprises of the year, I think. But there's also this ecosystem of AirPlay 2 speakers. And so it's come to Sonos speakers. It's come to it's a long list of brands that are committed to working with AirPlay 2 or that already do. And that alone excites me because, like, AirPlay 1 for third-party speakers was never good. Mm. But AirPlay 2 is good, and it's not just like being kept with an Apple. Like, I think that, you know, we talked last week about, like, the potential of AirPlay 2 to come to Echo speakers. Like, there's, that wouldn't be insane, you know, because the list of AirPlay 2 speakers is so long that they have it divided between speakers and receivers. Like, you know, it's being picked up quite well. I think the only thing that I'm kind of watching for is when they first announced AirPlay 2, they said, you know, Beats is a committed partner, you know, that Apple owns, and we've not yet seen the Apple Beats AirPlay 2 speaker and what that'll be like. But there's a lot of AirPlay 2 speakers on the market now, and that
there was no news from Beats this year, right? I'm not forgetting anything.
Yeah, no, it's just new colors of stuff.
What is that department doing? I guess they're all just kind of working on Apple Music stuff now, and like the hardware team's working on features of AirPods and the over-ear headphones that became a rumor this year. Like,
yeah,
the actual like Beats company might have been you know, pushed off into other teams.
Yeah, yeah. And in terms of like the HomePod launch too, by the way, like I wrote a year in review, look at the HomePod this week or last week, and just starting off, like it was just weird to think about being in December 2017 and HomePod like not being out yet, because it felt like it's been with us for a year now. And I guess part of it was just that it did launch like within about 6 weeks of the year turning over.
Yeah, it was like mid-February.
Yeah. But I mean, it launched without stereo pairing and multi-room audio and like key features that you would expect it to have. And then throughout the year, Apple added things like the promise stuff, you know, stereo pairing, multi-room audio. And then you eventually, you know, and that, I think that also had calendar support with it. And then you eventually got multiple timers only on HomePod with Siri, not on other versions of Siri. You know, but things like the ability to make and receive phone calls, like surprise features that Apple hasn't broadcast what they're going to do with HomePod in the future. They just ship it, you know, when it's ready, I guess. And that's like kind of concerning, because I look back at my HomePod review on March the 9th, like a month after it came out, and my concern at the time was, this is like pretty good hardware. There's some obvious features missing. It'll be better with those features. But then you've got to compare it to like Echo, where they add new things every month. And with Apple TV 4 launched with like obvious missing features, then there was like fast development to add those features in, and then it's been done for like 2 years, you know, since then. Like they added a 4K version of the hardware, but like the software has been just kind of finished. And I don't know that we know yet if HomePod is like finished, you know, or like near complete, and then it'll just be what it is, or if it'll be like iOS, where there's like new features, you know, regularly. But if it wants to be, you know, competitive with Echo, I think it needs to be more like iOS, where like where every software update there's something new, and there's so much low hanging fruit still for HomePod. Like even now, that's not there.
It can't be in maintenance mode, which is kind of how the Apple TV feels at the moment. Like,
sure, yeah.
They basically left the Apple TV to do nothing for 2 years now, assumedly waiting. They'll probably have a renewed effort with the TV subscription service, but until then, there's basically nothing.
Yeah, and with the year to look back on, like, the HomePod reputation was terrible 1 year
going
ago
in,
when it was late. Because, it was announced late in, like, June 2017. It was like, Apple's kind of late to the game here, but they're framing it as a smart assistant with great audio quality. And by the time it launched, like, the Sonos One existed, better versions of the Echo existed, you know, and the Echo line, like, used to just be one speaker, and then it became this whole, you know, line of speakers. So by the time, like, HomePod actually was supposed to be out, there were already smart assistant speakers with good audio quality also in the market, and then Apple was late, you know, and it's like, it had so much against it at first, but I think just from, like, being available, and, you know, people can buy it and try it and use it and, you know, have their own opinions. Like the early reviews and the reputation, it's you know, just by being good at what it does, it's improved since its reputation, you know, initially.
Yeah, it started off on a, like, it, just in terms of like community perception.
Yeah,
it was in negative credit before it launched.
Yeah,
everyone thought it was like a joke. Not us, but most other people did.
Yeah.
Then it came out and it didn't have, you know, the key music features, the AirPlay 2 stuff. So it got panned for that. And then that stuff got added, and slowly people kind of caught on that, hey, this was a good music player, and people like playing music. And then it added a few more features. And I think only now the whole wave of the phone call stuff and the timers stuff is actually like setting in. And you hear, you know, various people buying more in the run up to Christmas and the nice deals. And people actually do recommend it now. Whereas it was like very, very low on the list. And the like my opinion of it is still kind of what we had in February, where it was like a great product for what it did, but it was too expensive and needs to do more. And it wasn't in a state where I could recommend it to other people, really. That has changed a bit with the addition of more features. Like, if somebody asked me about it now, I wouldn't tell them not to get it. I'd be like, yeah, you'd probably like it. But the price just means there aren't that many people who are asking, should I get it in the first place? Like, the price turns a lot of people away. And even as somebody who uses the HomePod like almost every day, it still feels like it needs to get cheaper.
Yeah.
$50 cheaper, $100 cheaper, like that kind of range.
Yeah, people really
even if it added 10 more features, it would still need to be cheaper.
Exactly, yeah. People really liked the $100 off price point during the holidays. And it's like, you know, Apple didn't do that directly, and they only did a sale, you know, in the UK through the promotion that we talked about, and that was pretty limited. But people, like, even to me, like $250 feels kind of high for HomePod. Like, you know, something like, I don't know. It's something about it. But I guess people, it's not as bad as $350, you know, and $350 definitely does seem steep, like even at the time it did. So I hope there's some movement there. But like, even I guess my bigger point though is that like, through all the debt that HomePod had when it hit the market, it's, you know, on its own without too much push from Apple. Like, it's done pretty good to redeem itself. But it would be quite easy for it to slip back again if it just remains stagnant. Like, it needs to keep moving forward. Otherwise, it's going to become boring and, like, you know, Echo gets more exciting. Yeah,
so. Yeah, it definitely wasn't a flop, but it's also clearly not the market leader.
Yeah.
And we're hopeful that it will go places, but, you know, Apple's a weird company. Sometimes they deprioritize stuff and leave them to languish for ages. Like, do you want to? We referenced it slightly, but the only exception to the whole shipping in 2018 rule is the AirPower, Matt.
AirPower, like, it caught me off guard because the framing. I'll tell you what got me off guard with AirPower is people got impatient about AirPower in like January, February, and March. And to me, like, my whole reaction then was like, it was a sneak peek preview in September. Like, we've got this whole year to get through before we start getting antsy about AirPower. You know, and obviously when we got to the 1 year mark in September, it's like, okay, something's going on. Yeah, it's not intentional. But like, if it would have come out in June or August, like, I would have felt kind of okay about it. But, you know, here we are. As of recording, it is December the 21st, and we watched the, you know, the hour that Apple can bury news, kind of, you know, typically bury news before the weekend, and it passed. And so it looks like, you know, we'll probably go through the weekend and Christmas Eve and Christmas Day without, you know, any story on AirPower. And maybe it'll be like the weekend before New Year's Eve that this gets resolved in one way or the other. But that is definitely hanging out there.
Yeah, and the Mac, people are going to go, oh, hardware, Mac Pro is obviously still out in the wings. But Apple did address, obviously, that in April, and they never originally said it was coming out in 2018. They originally said it wasn't coming out in 2017. And then in April time frame, they said it's not coming out in 2018. It's a 2019 product, so that's definitely like one of the big harbingers of the hardware thing that we're looking forward to for next year, at least. As like, I'm not necessarily going to buy one, but I'm really interested to see what it ends up shaking out, like the offering is. But it is not late. Like, people are, especially when the height of the delayed meme was around, people would put late stickers on stuff, like the AirPower stuff in March before it really applied. Like, right, you got to give them the fair. If they say 2018, you got to give them 2018 at the end of the day.
Like. Yeah, and for like as of January 1st, we're in Mac Pro and Apple Pro display territory. You know, it's the calendar year that it's coming out. Apple said so. But like, realistically, it's probably fair to guess, you know, June preview, December release, you know, and anything better than that is like a surprise.
Yeah, I mean, they had both of the Mac, like they had the Mac Roundtable in like March, April time. They had the update on AirPower on the Mac Pro in the April timeframe as well. So maybe it's April, but it doesn't seem... Why would they do it separately? Like, it's such a perfect WWDC product. Like, that's... You're talking to the people that buy them.
Yeah. Now, so only thing I'll say this in this area that's kind of weird, though, is that in this calendar year, there's been no change to the consumer iMac. And so we've gone this whole time without an update to the iMac. And the iMac Pro was released in 2017 December, and so like it's pretty much a 2018 hardware release, and maybe like the next place that the consumer iMac goes is closer to like what the iMac Pro is today, and then you advance the iMac Pro, and so maybe that ends up being like a spring 2019 thing. But I think that is like one thing looking back that's a little odd is that so much of the Mac lineup got less confusing this year, except for like what's happening in the iMac, and there's no like concern that the iMac will languish now. That is a thing that happened is that the whole year goes by and there's no update to the iMac, which is
if the Mac Mini's getting updates, the iMac's getting updates. So yeah. There's no like fears of it being discontinued, but it was weird that people kind of expecting a consumer iMac update and we didn't get one. I hope when it does come around, it's substantial and not just like a spec bump. Like,
yeah.
I want the screen to get thinner bezels, cooler design. Like it's like a 2012 design and it's just hanging around now, and the Surface Studio looks better. I don't know what to say. It just looks cooler. And the iMac kind of looks old. Just while we round out the hardware section of stuff that Apple didn't announce, the iPod Touch is in even worse shape now than it was at the end of last year. It still hasn't been updated since 2015, and whilst it gets iOS 12, it cannot do group FaceTime. The processor is too old. You can do group FaceTime as audio only. You can't do video chat. So it just makes it even more of a black sheep or an outlier.
And unlike where the iPhone SE kind of goes away, like third-party retailers can still sell it, but Apple doesn't sell it directly. They sell the iPod Touch like in stores and on their website.
And if you go on their refurbished section, they sell the previous generation of iPod Touch that runs iOS 9. Like, it's mental.
Yeah.
If you don't want to support the Touch, get rid of it. Like, we saw them get rid of the other iPods in the 2017 timeframe, but... Yeah. The Touch stand stays over. And my sister has one. And she's like, why can't I do video chat with more people? And I'm like, it's too old. And then my parents overheard. And she's like, why don't we get her a new one for Christmas? I was like, there isn't a new one.
Yeah, no, with the iPod Touch, my daughter had one. And the battery just wore out on it after use. And I looked at the cost to replace it. And it, it's cheaper than a new one. But it's not. It's like over $100, I think. Like the whole... Yeah. Roundabout way to do it.
No touch ID, no face ID or anything like that.
I explained to her, and she's five. I said they don't make a new version of this, and we're gonna wait and see if they ever do. This week, 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Set App, the first subscription service for Mac apps. And together, we're giving Happy Hour listeners the chance to win Apple's brand new MacBook Air. SetApp is the first subscription service for Mac apps, offering users access to a suite of over 130 plus apps for just $9.99 per month. A few of the notable apps include Clean My Mac X, the Flume Instagram for Mac app, Archiver, Chatmate for WhatsApp, and the Capto screen recording app, among over 100 others. Since launching almost 2 years ago, SetApp has been consistently adding great apps along with new subscribers to make the platform a success for both its users and developers. Sign up for a free trial of SetApp's collection of over 130 Mac apps using our link in the show notes, and look for the giveaway entry form to sign up for your chance to win a brand new space gray MacBook Air with Touch ID. Our thanks to SetApp for sponsoring 9to5 Mac Happy Hour.
Kind of combined with that everything's delayed, which was the sentiment going into 2018, there was also the feeling of everything doesn't work properly. the whole functional high ground stuff dates back to a few years, but it had kind of been building up again, and there were, especially the end of 2017, just ended with so many random bugs across Apple systems. I was looking it up, and there were ones that I'd like forgotten about. You had the bug where anyone with physical access to a Mac could log into the computer without typing an actual password in.
That was bad.
You had the A question mark autocorrect meme thing where you just type words on your iPhone and it would put those random symbols in instead. You had the HomeKit one that 95 Mac broke, where people could just open your front door. That was a bad one.
that one was a scary one. When someone demonstrated to me, hey, I can unlock your door remotely with your Apple ID, like just the email address, that was scary.
And then in December of 2017, they had to rush out iOS 11.2 early to address the date crasher, which was just crashing iPhones all around the world at the same time. So they had to release iOS 11.2 on a Saturday, still the only iOS update they've released on a weekend because it was such an emergency runaround. So I've named four things, and they all happened in the space of like a month. I'm not sure I could name four problems, bugs that Apple had across 2018. Like, I feel like it's way better, and maybe it's coincidence. But obviously they had the iOS 12 stuff, which focused more on performance and stability. But I feel like we didn't really have any crazy bugs like this year. We had the eSIM weirdness, where it was supposed to start with 12.1, but then they had to wait. There were some weird bugs with like voicemail and stuff. We had to wait a bit longer, but there was nothing like showstopper. You had the watch DST problem, but that only seemed to have affected like people in Australia using the Infograph modular complication for activity. I'm not blanking right there. I can't think of anything crazy that Apple like screwed up this year on like bugs on a bug scale.
Yeah, no, I can't think of anything without like reaching back, and I'm not sure that there's anything to find. Like it seems that, I mean,
it was definitely less than 2017.
Yeah, I mean, the story a year ago was like the whole battery situation was breaking, and that's been a thing throughout the year, like people having their batteries replaced, and you know, the software updates for that were promised of like how to manage, you know, view your battery health and manage, and all those things shipped and like seemed to satisfy, you know, people. Like this year, the closest thing to that is like the Qualcomm, you know, back and forth. That's like changing software and like having iPhones banned in Germany. But it's like nothing that is embarrassing and like, you know, quality control in the same way. It's different reasons, you know.
Yeah, like one thing that just come to mind, we had the like iPhone XS front camera selfie smoothing palaver where it was like over smoothing stuff. And then the MacBook, probably the biggest one is the MacBook Pro, where you had the throttling problems.
Yeah.
And that was due to some weird, they called it what, like authentication key palaver. Like it was weird, but like the processors on the i9 MacBook Pros were really throttling, and people thought it was, originally everyone jumped to say, oh, the laptop's too thin, they can't support it. And then Apple was like, no, we can do a software fix here that, and you still see throttling under super heavy load, but it cleared the problem up to like normal levels. So that's probably the biggest thing, and even that wasn't, it didn't affect their main product line, and it was fixed relatively quickly. I think they did, and the biggest thing is that I know it's better because it's the end of 2018 and people don't mention it anymore.
Like, yeah.
Like the end of last year, it was just like software quality, Apple can't make software anymore. It's like, what's going on? Whereas now, like, people don't really have that.
Yeah, that reminds me though of the with the MacBook Pro situation. I kind of lost that in my mind because I was on vacation that week, and it was just like, didn't have to live through that one really. But remember, that's like days after the HomePod launched, that the whole story about it leaving a ring on wood surfaces like happened, and then that slowly, slowly evolved into, so do other speakers with the same like audio dampening bases on the bottom of them, and then like it never, like nothing ever happened with that. Like, did they change? I mentioned this in my year, like my HomePod year in review story, but it's like, did they quietly change the process, you know, for how they make these things? And like, it doesn't happen as much now, or do people just like learn to put something beneath the HomePod if it's like on an oiled surface, you know? But like, that's one of those things where it was super obvious to see the symptoms of the problem. And, it just kind of went away, you know, like...
Yeah, we didn't really get a resolution.
Yeah, that was a situation where it's, like, definitely not a non-story, like, there was something there, and it just, like, went, you know, it just kept going, like, you know, no resolution. So.
If I had to guess, people just got on with it, and Apple made some silent change to some material somewhere that... Yeah, it was kind of a mixture of the two, and that probably doesn't make it go away entirely, but reduced the super bad cases of it happening, and not many people bought HomePods in the first place, so it didn't really matter. Like, it's kind of a combination of those three factors. I think, like, on this whole thing, obviously iOS 12, this is a great story of this year, was the whole narrative of where Apple was going to do more major changes to its operating systems, and then the whole software quality cloud. Essentially, Apple executive team decided to change course, and we had the Axios report in January, followed up by like Bloomberg and some other people, that they were going to do major iOS changes, including things like a different home screen, which is, you know, that's never been done before. And then that stuff was all shelved, or the teams that were working that were told, don't rush it out for this year. We're going to focus on performance. We're going to focus on fixing bugs. We're going to focus on overall stability. And that's going to be the kind of flagship for iOS 12. And that's exactly what happened, right? Like, we knew this was a thing because they even leaked an internal memo at the time, which is essentially confirming the rumors. And that leaked out and said exactly the same thing. It even had quotes from, like, the head engineer of UIKit and everything like that. And that kind of set... It kind of wove the storyline for the first half of the year, right? Because it came so true that it was like a preview of WWC in January. It was kind of unprecedented.
Yep. Yeah, looking back, whenever we received the tip, it was like on a Friday night, and it was totally anonymous, but it was pretty descriptive about like what happened in this meeting of like changing the focus of the software updates for this year. Like, looking back on it, obviously it's way easier to say this now that we saw what actually happened, but it would have been very cool to have ran this story and just said, like, look, you know, no sourcing behind this beyond, like, we received this, but, like, this is what someone is telling us, you know, like, then, because that, we received the tip, like, what, a couple of weeks before the Axios story went up?
Yeah, it was like a week and a half before.
Yeah, and so obviously...
And it was fully anonymous, and it was short, but it was descriptive. It was like, Craig Federighi had a big meeting and told everybody that they're freezing major features and focusing on performance. That was essentially what the tip said.
Right. So looking back, like, that would have been neat. And we did have some pretty cool stories this year, like, you know... I mean, it's like a year ago, we were looking back and we had... you know, the 10 leaks and the AirPods leak and, you know, Animoji and the Series 3 watch. And then this year we had, like, almost a repeat of that from, like, different methods with the 10S and 10R name and the way that the 10 looked and the 10S looked in the gold and the two sizes and the way that the watch looked was, like, my favorite of the year.
Yeah, that was good.
But, like, it would have been neat to have just, like, ran that as, like, what we're hearing. And then, like, part of the story would be, you know, we heard that and then it panned out. But the way it did go, it was neat, though, is, like, early in the year, we got a preview of WWDC, and then WWDC felt like, "Yep, this is what everyone, you know, was talking about."
Yeah, because it really set up the year. Like, it was like, well, Apple is clearly aware of the performance and stability stuff because of this leak, but we'll have to wait and see whether it actually makes a difference. Because there was a few quotes in like the Axios story from January where it was some members of Apple's internal engineering team do not believe that the focus strategy will make any difference.
Right, like, yeah, there'll always be bugs and we're just going to have no features and no benefit either. Like,
and I think that didn't happen, right? Like, people love iOS 12 for its performance stuff, and it's not bug-free, nothing is, but it meaningfully improved older phones, and it even had significant improvements for current generation models as well. Like, you can argue whether, like, it was better strategy for Apple to push out newer, flashier features faster, or do this thing that they did, where they moved so many engineers just to working on various performance improvements. But that definitely paid off. Like, it wasn't marketing. Stuff got faster. All my family and stuff that had iPhone 6s and older phones, they were all, you know, pleased that it actually made a difference. Like, it wasn't just, oh yeah, it's going to be better. Like, it meaningfully and visibly you could tell when you changed on especially on old devices. Like, it was so much better.
Yep.
But obviously, as well as setting up 2018 for the kind of it, like, setting expectations, it then just redoubles the prominence of this year, because now people are expecting the home screen redesign, the Springboard update, iPad window tabs, a change to the Files app. Like, that's all back on the cards now, because the leak last year prescribed that it wasn't happening in 2018, but it had been pushed back to a two-year cycle. And so the 2019 updates are right on that money. And it's like, it'd be really cool if we have another big leak in January where they have a meeting and it's like, yep, we are delivering on these features. Because then everyone will be so excited. Like, people will flip out when they see, like, the iPhone home screen change, even infinitesimally. Like, the grid has lasted a really, really long time and served pretty well on the phone. It's definitely become more dated on the iPad, especially as the iPad's got bigger. The grid of icons on the iPad just is terrible, and clearly not an efficient use of the technology. But there's still obviously loads of stuff that they could do on the iPhone home screen now. Even if it wasn't adding new functionality, just a rearrangement where it's kind of weird how search you can get from the left screen, and then you can pull down, and then you can get it if you pull down notifications and then find the search on there as well. Like, and the widget stuff, like the widgets on that second, on that, like, you know, minus one page, it didn't work out, right? Like, people don't go there. It doesn't happen. You don't check them, really. Like, they need to bring some dynamism and moving stuff to the actual home screens that people put app icons on. And the leak didn't say that that's what they were doing with the home screen revamp. It just said there was a significant home screen revamp. But now our, like, imaginations are running wild about it.
Yeah, and part of why, like, the iOS 12 thing feels okay is that, you know, they did strike a good balance of you know, performance improvements and stability, but it was also helped by the fact that, like, you know, AirPlay 2 and Messages and iCloud and, like, Apple Pay Cash and stuff like that, like, that was promised before delivered, and so we still had some new stuff. And I think they did a pretty good job. Like, I couldn't explain to you everything new in iOS 12 now as, like, I could when it was brand new, but it still felt like it was a nice update. Like, I wanted to install it on our devices, not because it was, like, you know, more stable or anything, even if it was, but because there was some cool stuff to try out and, like, use and benefit from. And it's like, you know, I feel like iOS 13 could be like a repeat of iOS 12 where, you know, it's not no new features. Like, there are new features in that are neat to use. You know, so I was thinking, like, could they skate by another year and focus on stability? But I really feel like they did a good balance of stability, but also delivering some new stuff, like building on top of what's already there without changing it, you know, to make it unstable and unusable and weird.
Yeah, I don't think they could go a whole nother generation without something more major. Like, I don't think they could have performance stability being the number one feature of iOS 13 again.
Right.
But if you do something as significant as, like, cosmetic changes to the home screen, the launcher that everyone uses every single day, it kind of gives you, like, a pass to do less stuff elsewhere, if that makes sense. Like, if you put so much effort and energy to, like, updating the home screen, if you then changed none of the apps or, you know, the way Files manage and stuff, people just excuse it. It's like, we got what we wanted in a major change to the home screen that's better in, you know, these three ways. And if there aren't updates to all these random apps and, you know, like Siri shortcut stuff, right? Like, if that wasn't around, people would just pass it away. Like, that gives them the pass to next year. Like, the pass this year was, oh, we're doing the performance focus and it made a difference. And if 13, they could really herald the home screen changes and it wouldn't really matter what the other bullet points were. Like, that is just enough on its own. That's what everybody sees. That's what all the iPhone marketing pictures are. They're pictures of the iPhone on the home screen. Like, if they change that, it's significant enough to cover up other stuff that would get pushed back.
Yeah, like, and I mean, 13, you know, 2019 iOS 13 can be a big iPad year, and any change you make to the iPad home screen, like, you can apply that to the iPhone for the most part. Like, that you can do more stuff on the iPad home screen than you could on the iPhone. But even if it's just like, you can put widgets on the home screen, or, like, searches can be, like, permanent, you know, like, have a permanent Siri spot, you know. those are all things that you can scale to the iPhone as well. And so you kind of get those features for free, even though they're meant to make the iPad, you know, better for what it is.
Yeah, I mean, we've complained multiple times how they made the widgets view on iPad worse in 11 and 10. Yeah. Like, it went from two columns to one column, and that's how it's been. And even if they just put it back to two columns on the second page, it'd be better. But if they just brought those widgets to the actual home screens alongside the app icons, that'd be huge. And maybe on the iPhone, you can only put one widget per page because it's a smaller screen. And then on the iPad, you can put as many as you want. Like, that's the way you can scale up and down by retaining functionality.
And with widgets, it's like there is the page zero, the today view page or whatever it's called, like that you can put them there. But part of the kind of like clever solution around putting them on the home screen was that you can 3D touch icons and see the widgets for those app icons, you know, for those apps. But that never made it to iPad. And now the iPhone XR, you know, like arguably what could be the most popular like new iPhone, you know, in the next few years isn't going to have that ability. So it makes sense. And we've seen iOS already, you know, consider no 3D touch. Like what can we do instead to bring the same features over? So, I mean, the obvious thing is just put widgets around apps, you know, if you want to.
Yeah. And I think like the 3D touch quick actions, not just the widget, but just like those actions, if you could make like proper home screen shortcuts for them, that would, I think a lot of people would like that as well. And this is, you know, Android has a lot of this stuff, but obviously you bring it in a nice Apple-y way. So you could have like a direct link to a specific Reddit subreddit, not just, oh, I'm opening the Apollo app. Like, you could take those quick actions and actually bring them as dedicated icons on the screen. And then fold like Siri shortcuts into that. Like, at the moment, if you want to put a Siri shortcut on the home screen, it has to do this kind of workaround where it launches Safari, which then launches the action, and it just like bumps you between three apps for only technical reasons, constraints of the way the sandboxing model works. But you could see if they revamp the home screen how you don't need like a one-to-one relationship between icon and app. You could have more icons that activates features inside of the apps by themselves. And you can do that in the way that doesn't alienate people that just want to carry on using their phone. Like, it could be even optional. Like, you have to go out your way to make the shortcut and put it on the home screen. But if you do, you just get like a nicer experience. Same with the widgets. And maybe there's some automatic stuff they do. Like, you know, people always say, oh, look, the clock's animated, the app icon. Let's animate the weather app. Like, and you could extend that to third party apps as well. Like, I think there's plenty of ways that Apple can improve the experience on both iPhone and iPad without making it more complicated.
Yep. And just to kind of recap the section here, like if iOS 13 focuses on the iPad primarily, and then, you know, home screen is like part of that, applies to iPhone, there's a lot of stuff on the iPad that wouldn't apply to iPhone, I think. And then you could have another year of you know, like stable, you know, stable release for the iPhone, and that wouldn't be bad to have like 2 years in a row of the iPhone being like super stable, because that's not something that you want to be rocky, you know. Anyway,
yeah, you can like showcase one product and then the other one kind of sidles along, which is what the iPad's been doing for ages.
indeed. Yeah.
And kind of tying into this is like the 3D touch thing that you mentioned. It's like the original iPhone home screen was, you know, designed in 2007 when the devices were so different, and the origins and the DNA of that system have not changed in that time. Like, an actual newer home screen that has better awareness of the modern day feature sets, whether that's, you know, 3D touch being there or not there, you got like Apple Pencil, you got the quick action stuff, like you got multiple, the whole having being able to have multiple apps on the screen, like maybe the future home screen you can have like your sidebar app and the grid of app icons visible simultaneously, like stuff that the original home screen was never designed to support has just kind of been hacked on over the years. And especially if they've had 2 years to work on it, this acts as like a nice reset for that. And one of the big kind of rumors that is lapsing over into 2019 is the whole 3D touch going away, not going away. There were obviously rumors from people that said that the Apple is not ordering the components for 3D touch, so it's going to be removed from all the 2019 iPhones. And obviously that began with the iPhone XR this year, but equally that's the cheaper phone and it's using LCD, a new Liquid Retina LCD stuff, and maybe the only reason it's not there is technical, not because Apple doesn't want it. Like, these questions haven't been resolved, and this is part of the reason why I'm so into watching the development of haptic touch. Is it's if 3D touch is going away next year, you know, they need substitutes for at least some of it, and we've seen this happen. Like, the 10R came out the gate, and the 3D touch, the haptic touch was only in a couple of places. Then they've added it to notification preview in the latest update, and now there's even an accessibility menu where you can make it faster or slower. But at the same time, haptic touch still feels like a last minute project. It doesn't feel holistic. Like, the way, like, if you disable 3D touch on your iPhone 10 or your 10s, the lock screen shortcuts work like haptic touch. You long press and you wait and you let go. But, like, notification preview isn't re-enabled. It just doesn't work. Like, you can't long... things work differently in different places. It's like, and there's no, like, common framework for how the haptic touch gestures interact. And that feels like something that they're going to have to build out and flesh out, you know, if not in the iOS 12 timeframe, but in the iOS 13 thing. And obviously that ships in June, which then gives you a hint about the hardware in September.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and it's almost equivalent to, like, when we saw 3D touch initially... And it took about a year for that to be like better realized in iOS, like what it can be, you know, beyond the initial release. It's like that could also be true of haptic touch. And like, if that's the transition over, then you know, those on that single thing versus this system now, where it's like multiple approaches to the same problem, and you know, and it's not ever made it to the iPad yet. Like, it's still only on the iPhone. It's weird.
And I hope haptic touch isn't the future of. Like, that's their answer. I would hope there's something that isn't necessarily pressure, but it's something else that does that kind of achieves the same goals. Because haptic touch is not as nice as 3D touch is. It's just not as nice. But I can see why maybe 3D touch is going away, because clearly they haven't been able to bring it to the iPad. And if they've got this solution in the wings that works on iPad and phone, it makes sense for them to do that and swap over. Like, the thing that keeps coming up in my head is the Bloomberg report about the hover gesture stuff, where you're not touching the screen, you're just like keeping it above it and it knows. Like, if you hovered over something, maybe that's the activation for the icons or the actions, like the secondary commands. And if they can do that on iPhone and iPad, it makes sense to move away from the pressure sensitive stuff as much. Like, it's certainly an interesting thing to watch for in 2019.
Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Ops Genie, now from Atlassian. Downtime is awful. You've lived through it, I've lived through it, and it's no fun. It doesn't matter if it's at home or at work or wherever you experience downtime. When a system you rely on goes down, it immediately throws a wrench in every part of your life. When it's worse is when you're the one responsible for fixing it, and you don't have a plan to manage your way through it. That's what Ops Genie is for. Ops Genie gives your team the power to respond quickly and efficiently to unplanned issues. Are any bad issues ever planned for? I think we all know how that goes. Ops Genie helps you notify the right people through a smart combination of scheduling and escalation paths that take into account things like time zones, vacations, and holidays. Obviously, you want the right person notified immediately, but if that person is not available, you want the next person notified without having to wait, only to realize that the first call person isn't actually on call. This is where Ops Genie's smart magic comes into play. It knows because you've told it previously, back when times were calmer and you could think through it all. Ops Genie keeps track of all that for you, and when problems inevitably occur, Ops Genie is there to help. Also, now that Ops Genie is part of Atlassian, it opens to all kinds of integrations with things like Jira, Amazon CloudWatch, Datadog, New Relic, and more. That's what Atlassian is all about. They integrate well with their own solutions, but they also integrate with other popular solutions too. Check it out, opsgenie.com, to sign up for a free company account for up to 5 users. No credit card required, no time restrictions. This is a fully free account for you to actually use, not just try. That's opsgenie.com. Never miss a critical alert again with Ops Genie. Our thanks to Ops Genie by Atlassian for sponsoring the show.
as always, we're ending the holiday season with rumours of Apple failing to sell phones. The stock price is falling amidst, you know, wider turmoil of craziness and turbulence in the stock markets. But like Apple's financials from the mid-year, where they were being like the first $1 trillion company, are not as rosy going out of the year. And this is a pretty common trend. Like, everyone loves to say that the iPhone is doomed and they're not selling as many this year. And at least historically, that hasn't really panned out. It's always been pretty positive. This year's a bit different. And obviously, we've seen the iPhone unit sales growth has gone to zero over the last, you know, 2 or 3 years. And Apple's began its transition into like into services for more growth. And we're seeing these trade-in deals be really aggressively promoted. And the trade-in like discounts that Apple is doing is unprecedented. They've never done something this significant for just released models. And just today, we saw them roll out the trade-in deal to a lot more countries, including the UK, including China. It moved out to like 10 total countries, although it only works to get the extra bonus on the trade-in. If you go to a retail store, you can't do it online, which is US only, which is a bit odd. But, you know, is that a sign that iPhone sales are weak? It's hard for me to see it as a sign that they're strong, if that makes sense. Like, maybe they plan to do so all along, regardless of how sales were doing. But it doesn't feel like the XS and the XR cycle is setting the world on fire. And part of that is because they're getting a hard compare with last year when the iPhone X was so different.
Right.
We'll have to see in earnings in January exactly how that goes, though again, we're not getting unit sales numbers. But the thing which Apple is going to focus on in its earnings calls, even more strongly than they've been doing now, with unit sale numbers out of the way, is services.
Right.
Like, this earnings call coming up will be the first time that Apple reports gross margin for the services division. They never did that before, so people will know, like, if you spend $10 on services, what percentage of that turns into profit for Apple. You could kind of guess before, but they never actually said it, but now they're going to break it out. And throughout 2018, we saw so much preparation, either in official reports or rumors, of Apple setting up its like content and service strategy for the forthcoming year. Across, we had 2018, we had the whole TV stuff, you know, constantly rumors of Apple looking into shows, signing shows, bringing on more people. They seem to have blown past their $1 billion rumored budget based on how much stuff's in the works. We had the whole Charlie Brown Peanuts announcement relatively recently. Like, it's never ending. You have the Jennifer Aniston show getting new directors and actually going to pilot. You had the whole what's the talk show host name?
Oprah.
The woman? Yeah. Oprah. Yeah. They had the massive thing where they're doing this deal,
and that's been like the most that they've acknowledged that they're doing all of this, really, is like they had an announcement to say we have signed with Oprah, you know, and everything.
Yeah, obviously they've said that they're doing original content TV, but they haven't really dug into details officially or formally. Obviously, we see all these reports of them signing on shows through like Variety and other sources like that, but that's not Apple's, you know, official spokesperson. But the Oprah thing was an apple.com/newsroom press release. Like, they pumped that up.
Right.
And it's a huge name, and there's probably going to be some TV stuff there. They said there might be some app stuff there. Clearly, they're getting this enough suite of shows into production for a launch of the original content TV subscription service at some point in 2019. Who knows exactly when? Might be spring, might be later. And then behind that, they also seem to be investigating into doing like feature films as well.
Very different, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very different company. Like, and they've kind of always had like the content side in the iTunes store, but there's a big leap to, you know, actually making it themselves, and then dealing with those conflicts of interest. Like, people, we had this whole thing recently with, you know, Apple sending out push notifications left, right, and center, and I don't know if they actually intended to go like that, like, or if, because I don't think someone sat there and said Apple and like, we're going to do this, annoy everyone, but they just don't have the infrastructure set up right to properly target these alerts to people that actually want them in the best way. And you also then probably have a different slice of the company saying, well, we're the growing service division, give us more resources, let us send out all these notifications left, right, and center. Like, these tensions show up, and it's critical to observe, like, how they balance that stuff between, you know, hardware and software.
Right.
The TV dongle rumor is a perfect example of that. Like, if that comes out, the services, the people running services will be very happy, but the people making, like, the future of Apple TV, the set-top box, you know, necessarily won't be. And seeing where they come down on those things, you know, defines the future of the company. It's like, as simple as that. They're not saying services for no reason. That's where their sales growth is coming from for the foreseeable future. That all these hardware projects that are in development that we've heard about, at least, like glasses and car stuff, maybe, you know, they're 2-3 years away yet. Like, the lens of the company is on services, and it could be bad. Like, the traditional simple model of, you know, Apple makes iPhones, iPads, and Macs and sells them to you. When they shake that up properly, like, they've started with Apple Music and stuff, and I think iCloud's a perfect example of, like, the friction of moving towards a services model. But the the current iCloud offering of the storage tiers is holding the hardware back. Like, there's no other way to say it. Like, 5 gigabytes free is not good enough, and it sours your experience of using the products. And it's been a while now, and they haven't changed it. Like, I remember when they did the iEducation event in March, March 2018, and they gave out 200 gigabytes to all the students.
Right.
I was, like, quite optimistic at that point. I was like, they're doing it, right? They're going to give 200 gigabytes to students, and then by the end of the year, they'll up, like, the base tier for everybody to, like, 50 gigabytes. But that didn't happen. And at this point, it's... I don't have as much faith anymore. Like, I still believe that they can up the storage tiers and not lose out on money by offering more things for iCloud. Or you have the thing where if you give them 50, they get invested, and then you get them further down the line. Like, you might be turning people away when you only give them 5. Like, they don't know what they're missing out on, really.
Yeah,
you don't get the time to stick your teeth into it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's part of this, like, your back is that with most of like future things that are built, you have like rumors in the news, but you don't have, like, definitive, this is the step of the process. But, like, with the video service, we've seen, like, every piece of that slowly fall together, which has been a little bit different for an Apple service. I mean, other than that, you can look at acquisitions and see, like, what they're planning on doing, or supply chain reports for, like, hardware. But it's been very different, and there's not been, like, any answer in this year, like, clearly about what it's going to be, you know, beyond something with, what do they say? They're going to tell great stories, you know. it's like, okay, let's, you know, hope so. You know, but as one thing where it's built up this year, and hopefully, you know, early into next year, we have, you know, some idea about, you know, where this is all going, you know, and if it will even be good, because we obviously saw in the past, Apple's, like, very sloppy in like, you know, step into video entertainment.
Yep.
With Planet of the Apps, which they put out there. It was part of Apple Music. It was bad. It went away. Like, they're never going to speak of that again. And that was very un-Apple. Like, that whole project and, like, how it went out there and, like, went away. With Carpool Karaoke, like, they attached themselves to, like, another like, property that was already successful. And, like, that's just, like, a bonus. And all of this TV content under the Sony guise is going to be different. Like, it's serious business. And it's like, so but we've still got this big gap in between Planet of the Apps and then the new stuff, you know, and we've got to be getting close to that, you know, shipping, you know.
Yeah. What if the new stuff comes out and nobody likes any of it?
Yeah. That's risky. Cause, like, it's like, and it's also, like, taste. And so, like, Amazon has Prime Video. Like, they've got a video service with original content, and that's part of what makes me think, like, this is less weird for Apple, is that, you know, Amazon's also a technology company. You know, like Facebook and YouTube have had trouble with, like, any kind of original content that sticks. But you know, in the way that, like, Netflix, you know, entered original content, and, like, now they are like overwhelmingly original content, it seems possible for like a company to go from like not doing what an HBO does to doing what an HBO does, and like kind of HBO and Netflix like style. So it seems plausible that Apple could pull this off just by like putting the right talent behind it and enough money. And it's not like, you know, Eddie Q is in charge, like he oversees it, but like he's not saying I've got experience doing this. He hires the right people to do this and then they do it. They seem to be doing that, but on the same hand, it's like I don't know. Like, there are some shows that are talked about from Amazon, but like you don't think of Amazon Prime Video as like it being a great video service in the way that you think about Netflix being a great video service, you know, whether it's the catalog that they have or the original content. And it's like some of that stuff can take years to like pull off having a hit, you know, and Apple's communicated that they want to hit with its video service. You know, they want a Breaking Bad. That's why they've hired like people behind it. But we don't know like what the challenges will be if they can do it, you know. And
yeah, I believe it can be done, but it's not going to be a walk in the park. Like Apple is a company that has spent so many years fine-tuning hardware, software, right? And then in the last, you know, for even last half decade, they've moved forward with some services stuff in terms of internet, you know, the iCloud side.
Yeah.
But even on hardware and software, they mess up, right? Like iOS 12 focus on performance and stability is not the best plan. Like they only did that because they'd messed up before and they had, you know, they'd upset people. And we see these, you know, various bugs that pop up every now and again. We've got the iPad Bengate stuff, which may or may not be a thing, but, you know, clearly wasn't at least communicated very well, that's going on right now. And services and content, you know, original content services are the same ballpark, except they don't even have experience to rely on. So it's like completely blind. And I think it could be good, and maybe like, but you could. It's unlikely that they're going to have, you know, a one shot hit. Like they're going to have to adapt. They're going to have to change. And if you just get one great show, is that enough to convince people to subscribe? Maybe not. Like you need several good. You need a few for people to get on board, and then you got to reinforce it with ongoing content. Like it's a big undertaking, and I'm hopeful they can do it, but I'm not like. It doesn't feel like you can just sign off on the dotted line and ignore it and think like they're gonna pull it off. Like there's massive risk to it.
Yeah, the one thing about the idea of the video service that kind of excites me is that even if well, it's very different for Apple, so that's kind of neat to watch. But like even if it can't just be a clone of like Netflix, or it can't just be a clone of like even Amazon Prime Video. Like it's got to be different. The content that they have, the original content, will be different. So like that will define it too. And we don't know like what they'll do with the back catalog or anything. But it's something like, whereas like an audiobook service, it could be like a worse version of Audible. And like Apple Music is I think good. But you could look at like all the music in the world and it could just be a worse version of Spotify. I don't think that's the case at all, but like given the content, it could be that.
I don't think it's worse than Spotify, but it's not clearly number one either, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
They're kind of both competing for the same thing. And we saw Apple Music do those exclusive for a while, but they kind of backed off on that. And, you know, the key figurehead like Jimmy Iovine basically resigned from Apple this year, not really involved as much anymore. And the music thing is very kind of zero-sum game. Like, everybody's $9.99 a month.
Yeah.
Everybody's offering the same songs. The TV stuff, there is, because it's original, they have more flexibility in pricing, in distribution, and, you know, in what shows they're making.
Yeah. It's like what the video service is this year, you know, the next 5 years, like, it's got to, if it's going to be a serious project, like Apple can't just build it one time and be done. Like it's not like that. And it's not like more than iPhone where you can kind of like iterate every year either. It's like they've got to keep growing it and growing it. And it can't be the same thing in 10 years from now. Like it's got to be crazy different. You know, it's going to be in 2018, like the video service will be a baby. And like, it's got to be something if it works out. You know, it can't just be the same 20 shows and movies forever. Like, that's not a service. That's, you know, a subscription to like something that doesn't change at all. So it's gonna be something to watch like long term, and that's probably like, you know, obviously that's what the whole services thing is about, is like a different form of growing a new business within Apple, you know, I guess.
Yeah, and the news rumors with like the texture acquisition and that, you know, media, magazine, news subscription service, that's less interesting to me just because it's more like the Apple Music model than stuff it feels more formulaic.
Yeah, it's stuff you can already get, just like repackaged in a different way. Like, how is it presented to you and how does it get to you, but not what is it, you know, that's different about it. So,
yeah, Apple doesn't have to worry about making the news. They just have to worry about getting enough people to sign up, getting a reasonable price, and they already kind of have the UI for it as well, because, you know, it's the Apple News app.
Yeah.
That one feels far less of like a black box of who knows what's going to happen. That one's like a straight line, whereas the TV stuff's like a massive curvy, wavy of, and you can't see the end.
Yeah. And the TV stuff, like all the projects, I think most of the projects that are part of it would have existed somewhere else if Apple didn't like win the auctions to produce them, you know, like in lots of these situations. I think there will be some stuff that like they creatively, it fit their vision. Like it might not have ended up somewhere else, but a lot of it like probably would have been somewhere else. And it's just like, it just kind of comes down to Apple making the right decisions of like what to package together and like how they present it. And they could totally like botch it in some stupid way. But we'll see, I guess, you know?
And then Apple doesn't like to call it, they don't really talk about Siri when they're talking about services at the moment, because it's not a revenue driver directly. But Siri is like one of their most important services that they have. And it's fair to say it hasn't received much love in recent years. Siri Shortcuts is nice, but it's not really Siri. Like, it's more like a shortcut system that you can activate with your voice. It's not, you know, natural human understanding of language and being an assistant. They just kind of branded it like that to make it sound better.
Yeah.
And I just, we say this every year, but it's like, Siri's not terrible, and people over-exaggerate how the gap between like Siri and the other competition. But it still needs love, and it still needs attention, and it still needs, we still don't feel like we've got like the Siri 2.0. It feels like the original Siri iterated on a few times. It doesn't feel like we've hit the next big leap, and the Apple relies on it more and more and more of its products, whether it's Watch, HomePod, iPhone, car, you know, the works. Like, it becomes more and more essential to their hardware, and they get more and more competition from Echo, Google, everybody. Like, it every year it just becomes more fine-tuned. Like, is this the year that Siri's actually going to be noticeably different? And maybe next year? Maybe?
I mean, there is, when you talk about, like, is Siri bad? Like, I was thinking, like, I use Siri, obviously, on the HomePod, you have to. And I use it on my watch pretty regularly. And I use Siri on the iPhone sometimes and on the iPad sometimes. But, like, I think, you know, on the TV, like, it can be good. It can be good for search and, like, you know, kind of moving back if you want to, like, re-listen to what someone said, like, have captions on for a moment, like, some cute stuff there. But on the Mac, Siri's bad. It's like,
yeah.
And on, like, there shouldn't be a difference of Siri in like all these different places. It should be like, if Siri is, it should be like, is Siri good or bad? You know, like Siri itself. Yeah. And instead, we've got like different versions of Siri, and that just shouldn't be the case. Like, there's kind of that with Amazon Alexa, in that like on Echo speakers, you've got the first class version of Amazon Alexa, and like, Alexa's embedded on lots of other electronics, and it's not as good because it's much more limited. Like, they kind of put themselves there, but like, Apple owns all of the things that Siri's on. It's not like a licensing thing. They're not like licensing it out to the Mac company. It's Apple owns it, and Siri's bad on the Mac. Like, you, like, I don't not use Siri on anything but the Mac. On the Mac, you can take Siri out of the dock and out of the menu bar and never see it or miss it or need it. And like, that's too bad. Like, you there. Maybe it's more of a Mac problem, but it's also like, there are differences in Siri between all the different platforms, and it would be really great to just look at Siri as like one thing on different like that works across the platforms in the same way. Like,
yes, Siri on the Mac can't set a timer.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like Apple Music is like different in how it works on each platform. Like, you can play it on the watch, on the Mac, on the iPhone, on the iPad, on the Apple TV, like on the HomePod. you don't have like a playlist that's here and not there. But on with Siri, it's like the feature set is complicatedly different in different places.
I use Siri on the HomePod and I use it on the watch quite a lot. I don't really use it on the phone that often. Like
where it maybe started, yeah.
Yeah, it's where it started, but it's almost like I use it less now that I have the HomePod in that because the reliability isn't as good, I just don't bother with it, if that makes sense. Like the HomePod detection and transcription of what you're saying is so much better. It's almost like the problems with the phone are exaggerated, so I'm more frustrated with it and don't use it as much. Or I get lazy in my enunciation. Like before the HomePod was around, I'd take the time and use Siri on the iPhone to take the care to say each word carefully, you know, slow it down, essentially. Whereas I don't find I have to do that on the HomePod, so then I've trained my brain not to do it on the phone, and then the phone gets it wrong more often.
Like, yeah.
And there's all these weird, you know, you don't need me or you to tell the listener the ways that Siri is bad. But just this week, John Giandri got promoted, and I was like, well, here's a basic test. I'm going to ask Siri to find out about the new head of Siri. So I asked my phone, who is John Giandri? And I did check the actual pronunciation before, because it is a weird name, so I'm probably messing up now, but I did check at the time, and it didn't work. And the phone would keep hearing, like, John Giant Andrea, like, three separate words.
Yeah.
And it just kept failing over and over and over again. I even tweeted about it. I was like, what am I doing wrong here? And Steve Trouton Smith actually said that it works for him, but he uses US Siri, even though he's British, but he uses the American Siri language, not just the voice, the actual Siri system. And I changed from UK to US. I said the same thing again, and it worked first time, and it transcribed me perfectly.
Ooh.
And it's like those kind of differences are problematic.
right.
And it's all of this stuff compounded on, like, Siri is such a big landscape, and it's so hard. It's like Apple Maps in scale of, like, how do you actually solve these problems for worldwide, for everybody. And I think with Maps, they've shown that they actually have a new, you know, the Maps 2 stuff ongoing now, and that's rolling out across next year. They haven't shown the roadmap for Siri yet, so you can't really put, you know, your faith in it beyond what's there today.
Yeah, that's true. And maybe, like, we mentioned at the beginning of the show, like, what is the roadmap for HomePod? It's like HomePod is largely, like, Siri driven, and so
yes, inextricably tied to the other thing that we don't know the roadmap of.
Yeah, even though, like, it's quite annoying to, like, map out in your head, because, like, on HomePod you can do multiple timers there, yay, but you can't do that on any other version of Siri. And it's like that's where all this is just frustrating. It's like, maybe the roadmap for Siri is the roadmap for HomePod, and, like, we did see some of that where when you can trigger Siri shortcuts on HomePod, like, that's a nice little perk that they added there. But
but it's not running on the HomePod, it's running on the phone. Like, it's just relaying.
It's a proxy, right? Yeah. Yeah, so we have been through multiple versions of, like, this year in review, you know, exercise of, like, you know, didn't happen this year with Siri, but, like, maybe next year, you know, and it's not terrible, but it's not great. And, like, the biggest reason to be optimistic now is that, you know, the ex-Google guy, John Giandri, is, like, not only hired, and then, like, they restructure, you know, the Siri machine learning and artificial intelligence, like, teams under him. But, like, as of this week, like we mentioned, like, he got promoted to the executive level, which is, like, no one needs to know that. But, like, Apple announced it at the end of December to, like, let us know, like, that in less than a year's time, he was hired and promoted. So that to me says it's going well. And people were optimistic by that announcement. Like, they look at that and say, maybe Apple can, you know, match what other companies like Google are doing in AI, and that'll apply to Siri, and, like, make that better in the future. So, and there's been, like, a lot of, like, how many changes were there to, like, Siri leadership before we got here? And we've not.
Oh, definitely a few. I mean, you've had constant change in the level of leadership that we don't see, because we had that, like, information report a while ago where the actual, like, leader of Siri was changing every other year almost. But even just in this, like, across 2018. It came in as Q, then he got switched to Federighi, and then it changed to Giandri. So that's three changes just that we've known about in this year alone. Like,
right.
It, And if you look at the deeper level of the people that you don't hear about, there was, like, for a while the search team was leading it, and then they got a dedicated AI person back in charge, then they got a search team again. Like, this is, the Siri leadership has been very, has changed over hands. Like, the turnover is massive on it. There's so much churn on that team, because I don't think Apple's got in its groove really with it.
Yeah.
And the Giandri promotion, and actually now there's a figurehead of, like, this person runs machine learning and AI Apple at the highest level. He's publicly known, and he's not just a VP anymore. He's the executive. He's a senior vice president. That is so encouraging to me on the scope of Apple's competence in fields of AI. Obviously, Siri is a big part of that, but it's not the only thing, of course. Like,
right.
AI could mean the self-driving car project. And we hope that Giandri was brought on board to help the Siri stuff, partly because of his background in Google Assistant and Google Search. We don't know that to be true, but obviously it's under his wheelhouse now. And at his previous company, he clearly led the team very well. And
right.
This gives me a lot of hope. Like, it's a proper commitment now. It's not like, oh yeah, we're going to make it better. It'd be like if Apple had like a VP of the App Store. You'd be like, yeah, they're really making the App Store better. Like, when Schiller took it over, and there were those like flurry of improvements to it, that was good. But I always felt like it was kind of, you know, because it's not in his like direct title, you can always kind of like wash it away. And there haven't been, you know, significant change to the App Store this year, for instance. Like, they launched it on the Mac, and that was about it. Because it's not, you know, Schiller's product marketing. He's not App Store. If they had an actual VP of App Store, that publicly, like, not in the internal chains, but, you know, with a face on the leadership page, then you'd be more behind it. And they've done that now for machine learning and artificial intelligence. And I'm really, really excited to see what happens. And I hope we see Giandri on stage at some point next year.
Totally.
Talking about something.
Yeah, because you can move teams back and forth through like existing leaders easily, and that's like adding responsibility to someone that already has a full time job. But like when you hire someone brand new and pay them a lot of money, that's a serious commitment. Like, that's hard. He could easily leave the company, get bored, not work out. But like the fast track from being hired to being promoted is a positive sign. And that,
yeah, you don't go from VP to SVP in 6 months and you're not doing something good internally. Like,
right.
One of the things he was touching inside must have been going really well for them to change that. Whether it could have been the AI, like machine learning side of the car project that it was really advancing on. So they were like, this guy's great. It doesn't necessarily mean Siri. If it's Siri, then, you know, we're quids in. But it clearly he's doing good work, and I really hope we see more of him, like, publicly going forward now.
Yeah, you know, he just when they did the Memoji thing for Emoji.
The leadership page.
Yeah, like, he was hired, but they only did it for the SVPs, and so like
he had a Memoji as well.
Oh, because I couldn't find one. I wanted to use it as the image on our story when we were in the story.
He definitely had one. He had like glasses and stuff.
Oh, okay.
They did the VPs as well.
Oh, okay. Those are not documented very well. Then it was hard to find on the internet. Like the SVP level was well documented, but not to blow that area.
Yeah, because they had one for like Lisa Jackson. He definitely had a picture, I remember it.
Oh, okay.
Because he literally only just joined, and it was like, I think I tweeted at the time some joke like, I think Giandri wishes he joined a week later so he didn't have his face destroyed.
It's too good.
And finally, in kind of the last like theme of groupings of stuff, it's the iPhone feels like it's on a good track. Right, like, we had the big change in iPhone 10. They pushed that to iPhone 10R and iPhone 10S this year, so all of the new iPhones are on the new design language. They're all bezel-less. People tend to like them when they get them, even if they're not selling as much. Like, I don't think people are rejecting Face ID wasn't a failure. They're on a good path there. We're probably, you know, we're not going to see major design changes for, I don't think, at least another year. Like, we're probably going to have the relatively same form factors on the iPhone for another cycle, and I think people are generally happy with that. The iPad and the Mac, however, like, that hardware still feels so unstable to me. Like, it doesn't feel complete, and the iPad's a lot, that's the software experience. Like, the hardware changes were great, but, you know, it's hardware and software together. The Mac has dual problems with like what's happening with its ecosystem, with apps. Is it going to merge with iOS? Is it not going to? And also, the hardware is still in a weird shape. Like, throughout this year, we had the rumors of the cheaper, lower priced laptop, and we were put all our hopes on that to clean up Apple's laptop line, and it just didn't happen. Like, we got a new MacBook Air at $1,200. And the old MacBook Air carried on being sold at $999, and they didn't update the 12-inch or the MacBook Pro. Yeah, exactly. And so almost all they did is make it even more confusing by adding another option in the lineup. Like,
yeah.
That is still a massive question mark of what are they doing there? Like, what when they updated the MacBook Pros in July, they said today, "Oh, we haven't got any updates for the MacBook Pro without touch bars." Oh, is that okay? It's coming later in the year. And then the later year comes around and there's still no updates for the Mac Pros without touch bars. But we got this new MacBook Air, which is cool, but still, we can't get the price down enough. That was probably my biggest disappointment, was that even Quo was saying there was going to be, like, the new MacBook Air was going to be cheaper for a long time. And if you could actually wipe out the aging, you know, silver bezel MacBook Air, that would have been a good move, and it would feel like actually doing something. But it just didn't pan out, and we still have the same problems that we did, 365 days ago with the Mac line.
Yeah, I mean, other than the Mac Mini, like getting the Mac Mini's like resolved now. Like they replaced the years old version. It's gone now. You can't buy it anymore. And there's a very nice version that you can buy now that has a. It's an update that can last for a while, but the MacBook Air is totally unresolved. And like the MacBook 12-inch, not getting, like, this was the first year that the 12-inch MacBook didn't get an update since it was introduced. Like, it came out in like, what, 2015 or so.
Yeah, 15. Yeah,
yeah, and it's had three versions so far, but this year it's that version. It's going to be over a year. It's over a year old. So it could have been updated in the spring and been on schedule. So now, like, if it gets updated next spring, it'll be like double its life cycle before now. And there's just like, that's one of the things is like, if you look at like buyer's guides of like when to buy stuff, the only thing that really has a schedule overall with Apple right now is the iPhone and the Apple Watch, because it's like paired with the iPhone. But like, none of the Macs, none of the iPads, not even the Apple TV, like, and there's no up to the HomePod so far. Like, there's no cycle to those things yet. And it feels like it's often reactionary to, like, the current challenge, whether it's the challenge with the Mac, the Apple TV being done, iPads, like, enough time to put energy there. Like, I don't know what the situation is there, but, like, it's only the iPhone. And I'm so happy that the Watch has the cycle that, like, is on track with the iPhone, but it's definitely odd. It's like within the Mac line, there's not even a single Mac that has a clean like update cycle. Maybe that changes in the future when Apple has more control over the whole stack, but right now it's not the case. And it makes the Mac notebook line, like at the bottom, is just very crowded right now. And that's something that needs to be addressed, even if it means like there's fewer choices. Like, that's the problem, is there's too many choices that are the same right now. And the only thing that's brand new is the MacBook Air. The Touch Bar might be a better value, but it's older. And the 12-inch MacBook, like, I think it's a great form factor that should continue to exist. But it's not, if it's not updated, then I'm not going to recommend it, because that's something that got better every year. Like, it needed the annual update to kind of get by. Like, now it's not getting that, so it's odd.
Yeah, and of course you've got the Marzipan situation of bringing iOS apps to the Mac. They obviously sneak peeked that this year and with four apps that are pretty bad. In 2019, they're obviously going to announce the thing for real and actually let other people build on it. And hopefully, when it comes to market, it's a lot more mature than what we've seen with their examples in news, stocks, voice memos, and home. And then, of course, you have the ARM question. It definitely seems like Apple's developing a roadmap for ARM on Mac. Maybe first products in 2020 are like what the rumors are kind of heading towards. Will we see indications of that next year? It's not clear yet. And then it leaves some of these, like, I'm worried that some of these products, say if the ARM stuff's going to happen like early 2020, they're just not going to bother updating them next year either, because it's like, why do we give them another year of life on Intel if we're gonna change over here? Like, for instance, the 12-inch, right? Like, that feels like a perfect product to start the ARM transition,
right?
And maybe because clearly with the ARM situation, they're not going to be able to do every single Mac at the same time. And I think the Mac Pro that's coming out next year, there's no way that's going to be an ARM thing. But if you release, that'll be kind of like the last major. It could be the last major product that is exclusively an Intel machine. You might have just another year of minor spec bumps on stuff, but nothing like radically new, which is why I'm so worried about the iMac, because if they're saving a big iMac update for the new architecture as well, we might just see another spec bump iMac in 2019 after having nothing in 2018 at all. Like, they need to be able to handle that transition pretty smoothly, and I think the way to do that is to start on the laptop line, which could be why the 12-inch is kind of hanging around at the moment. Like, if they went into WWDC and like, we are slowly going to transition the Mac to ARM, we've got a great roadmap of Intel products left to come out, but we are starting with ARM on the laptops, and here is the new 12-inch with ARM. We announce it at WWDC in June, but it doesn't ship till September or something like that. Whatever, comes with the new OS. Blah 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 blah. Maybe we go through 2019 with nothing at all, and it's further out. It definitely feels like the direction they're heading, just with how they positioned the iPad Pro and at that event, and like the Mac Mini, and kind of not even trying to mention the word Intel anymore. Like, Apple loves making its own chips now, and it's definitely. I'm convinced they're going there on the laptops and eventually the desktops, but the timing and the rollout plans are not crystal clear at the moment. So that's definitely a 2019, like, quote unquote theme.
Yeah. And I mean, other than that, like, so we're left with kind of like what happens with AirPower. So that's the only thing like hanging over. And that also includes like the AirPods charging case, so that's like a mystery too. You know, maybe we find out soon. But it seems like wherever that goes, there's also these rumors of like the new headphone stuff. Like, we're coming up time for like a new version of AirPods anyway, and so like it seems like 2019, like all the things that we just mentioned, and like 2019 could be pretty eventful, like throughout the year, maybe, or maybe like it's all at the end of the year. But
just on the iPad today, there was a Chinese media report that they're going to do the iPad mini 5 in early, like go into mass production at the end of December and go into release in like January, February timeframe.
Yeah, that was a funny report because like we're in the end of December now, so it's happening.
Yeah, but that lines up with what Kuo said though, because he said there was a new iPad mini, you know, maybe fall 2018 or early 2019. So it would line up with the previous thing. And on there, they also said they're going to change the 9.7-inch iPad to be 10 inches?
Yeah, this is interesting. Like, it's being a new design of some sort.
Yeah, like thinner bezels, seemingly, but maybe not as drastic as what we've seen on the iPad Pros, because they just came out and they're like three times the price. Like
a little smaller than the 10.5-inch iPad. Half inch smaller. same style, though.
Yeah, because 9.7 to 10 is not a huge difference, right?
Like, smallest leap yet, yeah.
That is true, yeah.
From an iPad.
Although I am kind of worried, because the thing that I kind of wanted, is that at the end of 2017, we had this whole meme about software quality and delays. And I feel like the equivalent thing that's reached the highs of this year is pricing, of just how everything's got more expensive.
Yeah.
And this iPad rumor put some alarm bells in my head, where it's like, are they introducing the iPad mini again just so they can make the entry-level iPad, the $329 one, more premium and more expensive? Like, if they do an iPad mini 5 at $299, that gives them headroom to push the, you know, now 10-inch iPad up to like $400 again, maybe with a slightly more premium look and finish, but the price shoots up. Like, the whole pricing thing, it's like every time there's a story about, you know, the analysts with iPhone sales, like Reddit's just flooded with, oh, it's pricing, and everything's like all rumors about next year. Like, the go-to joke is, oh, but it's going to be 50% more expensive, blah, 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 blah. Pricing has a limit, right? Like, Apple's obviously clearly increased pricing across the board this year. They couldn't do those increases again next year.
Right.
Like, you can't do it forever. The iPhone X, they added the Max this year, but the iPhone XS is the same price as the year before, like the iPhone X, the right. direct equivalent.
Yeah.
There's a limit, right? And it feels like we're at the end of 2018 and enough people have reached the limit of what they can afford that we're unlikely to go any higher. Whether the prices go down is a whole topic unto itself and not guaranteed, but potentially.
Yeah, well, and add into the mix everything we discussed about, you know, the move to services and how that gets presented. And like, you know, if Apple has 5 different $10 a month services that they want you to subscribe to, I mean, like, you know, then it's not going to help the meme of Apple, you know, is a monthly cash grab, you know, plus all the hardware is more expensive now. So.
Yeah. But that's definitely, I think, what we will look back on, like, this time next year. Like, 2018 is the year when everyone just saw everything get more expensive.
Yeah, yeah. And that kind of started, like, with the MacBook Pro in 2016, it feels like. Is like, we felt like that was a brand new MacBook Pro in 2016. Of course it was expensive, and over time it would come down. And, like, 2 years later, has it come down? Like, really? Like,
no.
Yeah.
They made the 13-inch slightly cheaper.
Right, but the 15 is just like, so maybe like this is where we are, and this is what we're stuck with. I guess we'll see though.
Yeah, it is, because you if you're turning to a services company, you still want to grow your install base of users because that gives you more users to sell services to, which is kind of a counterbalance to making stuff more expensive. It's, you almost want to make stuff cheaper to get people on board, to get them to sign up to services. So I think I would estimate that we've reached, like, we're not going to see price increases again like what we saw this year, next year. I just don't think it's tenable. But this is definitely how this year is going to be remembered, I think. Like, last year was software quality and delays. Next year will probably be the services march. And then 2018, it'll be like roughly summarized as everything got more expensive.
Well, the AirPods with the wireless charging case will cost more than the AirPods without the wireless charging case. So, but it's almost a carryover of this year if that delivers. Unless, do you think they'll sell AirPods with the wireless charging case for $159?
I'm hopeful.
Okay. Well, we'll see. Yeah.
At this point, are they even going to sell AirPods with a wireless charging case?
Right, yeah. It hurts.
Because if you buy an AppleCare and you need a replacement case, it's $60, $70.
Yeah.
So I would hope that the charging case is like $80 maximum, but it's, you know, adding a Qi coil, a wireless charging coil, does not make stuff that much more expensive. I don't know. Like, that the AirPods are the product that haven't yet been hit by the make stuff more expensive. They haven't had the opportunity yet to become more expensive. So right, they're still on the blocks. Yeah. But like, I don't think next year the 12.9-inch iPad is going to go above $1,000, like, entry price. I just don't think it can work.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's the Happy Hour podcast for this week. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Apollo Zach Benjamin. You are?
BZMAO.
And you can email us feedback at happyhour@95mag.com. And we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.